If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Friday. It's been another busy week for Norwich City on the transfer front. Pre-season kicks off tomorrow as well at Colney. We'll be there to cover all of that. We'll delve into all the transfer rumours that have come out as well this week over the course of the next hour or so. Adam Harvey joined by Connor Southwell and Samuel Seaman for your window watch this Friday lunchtime. Of course, we want your interactions, comments, questions, anything about pre-season. We'll try and delve into as many of those as we move throughout the show. Let's start first and foremost with the confirmation that we've all been waiting for this week. This man here, Matthias Kvistgaarden, is a Norwich City player, long-awaited. Transfer saga that's kind of been going on for the last week or so. Norwich City managed to get the deal over the line. Connor, what do you make of it? £6.9 million with a sell-on clause as well for Bromby in their four-year deal with an option of another year. Clearly a player that's got a lot of excitement, I suppose, around the Norwich fan base at the moment.
Yeah, and you can see why. I think those financial aspects were something that probably surprised us all. Really clever bit of recruitment and information gathering from Norwich, I think you have to say, in terms of uncovering that. But as I wrote about earlier this week, it's one thing to uncover it. It's then you have to have a process then to convert that into somebody willing to sign ahead of some really major clubs. And we reported, you know, all the way throughout that situation, some of the clubs that were involved, Eintracht Frankfurt, who are going to be playing Champions League football, Lyon, who I think was seventh in Ligue 1 last season, Rennes as well, who were kind of mid-table, Leipzig were mentioned, there were some Italian clubs, West Ham, Celtic, etc. So at different points, maybe rather than this summer, but that goes to show just how highly rated he's been. People can go and watch the chat I did with Toke Tillard, Danish football expert, Bromby fan, who kind of spoke about him and said probably if it wasn't for injuries, maybe he would be playing at a higher level already. So yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement there. Really intrigued to see how he'll get on. Sadly, not going to be one that we see tomorrow at Colney. It obviously interrupted his holiday to finalise that move to Norfolk. So because he was involved in the under-21s Euros. So one I think we'll see in Holland for the first time. Really excited about that. And yeah, I think certainly on paper, and of course you have to add that we don't know how these, and you know, don't need to tell Norwich fans about that, given we could mention a certain foreign striker who arrived at the club with a lot of excitement that maybe didn't live up to those expectations. So there are so many unknowns that we need to see, how he adapts to Championship football, how his body reacts to 46 games, the type of player he is, where exactly he fits in Liam Manning's system, whether he's a striker or whether he ends up on the left or whatnot. So all of these are still to be answered. But certainly right here, right now, you can understand why there's so much optimism and excitement about Kvistgaarden becoming a Norwich player. And I think hopefully it's one of a few more to come in this transfer window.
Yeah, do you sort of agree with the excitement and the hype, Sam, around him? A few people asking questions as well. Tom saying, how on earth did Napper and Dunn find out about the clause in the contract that no one else knew about? How does it work with access to other clubs' contracts with players? Are these released via agents? So maybe you can just provide a little bit of clarity on how Norwich have managed to pull that off.
Yeah, I think it's probably less easy than a lot of people think. I think I've seen some people suggesting that when you're going after a player, you almost get access to their whole contract and you just spend a few weeks just thumbing through it, reading every page. And it's not really like that. It's more about building relationships and speaking to various people who obviously have a stake in it. In some ways, I would almost liken it to what we do in terms of the fact that there's information there that obviously isn't in the public domain. And part of scouts' jobs, although what obviously a lot of us associate them with is watching players, deciding whether players are good enough to be signed, a lot of their jobs is actually about finding out information, speaking to various people involved in the player's situation, not only from a sort of contractual perspective, which is obviously where they've got this very handy piece of information from, but also they'll be speaking to people who have worked with the player before to try to establish the quality of their character, their work rate, what they're like maybe in training and things like that, rather than in the public domain with games and things like that that are readily available. So actually, I think this deal has exposed a part of recruitment and scouting that maybe we don't see so much of, even though it's actually a really, really important part of that job and of trying to recruit players. And you don't see too often in the announcement of signings the sort of head of recruitment or scouting individuals being highlighted and being praised. So that probably tells you how big a deal this is from Lee Dunn in particular, in terms of that scouting department. Obviously Ben Napo in charge of it as well, and it tells you how well they've done to sort of get this deal over the line. So yeah, it's a really interesting example of how scouts work, but this isn't the only time when they've gone digging and tried to find out some extra information that will help them in pursuit of a player. They'll be doing this with every single person, but this is just a really, really good example of one that has really worked out for them and one that they've pulled off in a really good way. As far as the hype and how excited people are, obviously I've seen the YouTube clips that we've all seen, and I think when you watch someone's best bits, it's hard not to get carried away with the quality of the player. But I think probably the thing that gives me the most confidence is the clubs that Connor mentioned before, in terms of how big those clubs are and how many of them there were tracking his progress. I think when not only you've got one group of scouts at a championship club deciding that someone's good enough, but you've got Champions League scouts, you've got, you know, six or seven big clubs looking at him in a serious way for a long time. That probably tells you what you need to know. But I'm waiting to see him in a Norwich shirt and see him playing in the Championship before deciding entirely what sort of player he is, because I think we've all seen it both ways round in terms of getting excited about players and then they don't quite live up to those expectations, and also maybe being underwhelmed by a signing and then they sort of they outdo the expectations. So I'll wait to see him in a Norwich shirt before fully getting excited or diagnosing him as the answer to all of Norwich's problems. But certainly when you look at the calibre of club that was interested in the number of them, I think that's definitely a very good sign.
Yeah, someone asking, Finley saying, regarding Chris Garden, any great signing but confused as to why he's gone back on holiday when was training with Bromby. Don't expect him to feature tomorrow though, Connor. Is sort of, you got any, I suppose, inside knowledge on maybe why he's not going to be in the building?
No, the only thing I can say on that, I don't know exactly, was maybe he was in very early stages of a return with Bromby. But yeah, the way it was kind of pitched to us was he kind of interrupted a holiday to sort of sort his Norwich move out. So that might have been maybe pre-existing when he came back with Bromby, and they've sort of given that to him back. There are so many ways that this could work. But yeah, he's taken a few days either way, which I think we probably all agree deserves after a very hectic summer. And then he'll come back for obviously Norwich's tour of the Netherlands. And hopefully see him in action in one of the games next Saturday. Either one, we're not quite sure how they'll split yet, but I would expect, if not then definitely, barring any injuries, the final ones on the Friday would be involved in one of them. So yeah, I think we'll see him for the first time in the Dutch kind of tour side of things.
I think on that Bromby training, it's also worth highlighting, I think they've got competitive games much sooner than Norwich. They've got a Europa Conference League qualifier on the 24th of July, and obviously the Championship doesn't kick off until the 9th of August. So that might explain sort of the difference between Bromby's timeline and sort of Norwich's in terms of his pre-season and his fitness.
Yeah, I see a lot of questions maybe around incoming rumours, but let's just talk about Borja Sainz because it's a deal that looks to be nearing completion, you know, should be en route at the moment to Portugal to try and complete that £14.25 million transfer to Porto. Looks to be a five-year deal as well, with Norwich having a sell-on clause as part of the deal. You know, clearly, Connor, it's been a, you know, ongoing saga now for a few weeks, so pretty good that Norwich, I suppose, have managed to get this deal all sorted, you know, in relatively quick order.
Yeah, I think the feeling I had at the end of the season was that they would try and move him on quickly, purely because I think they're a depreciating asset. So if it had got to August and he was still at the club, then I think you could probably knock a million or two off that price tag that they've got for him. I think it's an excellent bit of business. I certainly, again, felt at the end of last season if they'd have done very, very well to get in around the Jonathan Rowe ballpark, even with kind of a structured deal. That's kind of what they've achieved. And I think that's really good business, with obviously a pretty significant sell-on. There are some reports in Portugal that I think we understand to be correct, where there is some procedure where Porto can pay Norwich an extra, I think it's €1 million, to basically half that sell on. So that's something worth bearing in mind. But you look at someone like Guy Koresh at Sporting Lisbon, who went from the Championship to a big Portuguese club in Sporting. I don't exactly know the where that Arsenal move is. I think it's hit a bit of a snag as latest reports, but you see the level of money that he's being quoted around after a couple of seasons there. That is the level that obviously Borja Sainz will be looking to replicate. I think it's an excellent move for him, I have to say, in terms of the level and where he's at currently. I think it gives him a real opportunity to kick on, to put himself in an even bigger shot window. And I think, you know, sometimes Jonathan Rowe, Abu Kamara, we can talk about transfers where probably all parties haven't shaken hands with real kind of well-wishing and admiration for how the whole thing's been handled. But I think this is probably one of those rare cases where that feels like it is going to happen. I think for Borja, it's a brilliant opportunity at a massive football club and a chance to play European football as well. And for Norwich, it represents, for me, really good value for a player that's entered the last 12 months of his contract that they signed on a free transfer. And again, you know, we just spoke about Chris Gordon and clauses. Borja Sainz is an example of that working for Norwich previously, and then kind of really cleverly locating a relegation clause that allowed him to rip up his own contract, providing Giresunspor went down. A lot of clubs just wouldn't have waited that out and would have remained impatient and maybe moved on, but Norwich were waited. And actually, from that summer of 2023, I think that almost stands out as a real success story in amongst a window that's probably not remembered that fondly for the direction of travel that Norwich took it and the overall kind of pattern. And, you know, I know it's maybe not as popular, but I think Stuart Webber, who clearly was here at the time, Lee Dunn as well, was integral to those deals. Those two guys deserve an immense amount of credit for getting that deal done at that time, because Norwich have sold a player essentially for pure profit. And that is a real success story. And, you know, just going back to Chris Gordon, I think it helps Norwich, the fact that Gabriel Sara going to Galatasaray, playing Champions League, Europa League football last season as he did, Borja Sainz now going to play Europa League football, moving to Porto. These are stories, these are transfers that Norwich can pitch to potential recruits about maybe why they should pick them over the likes of Eintracht Frankfurt, over clubs that are going to be playing Champions League football. Instead of being part of that squad, come to us, develop for 2 years, we'll sell you. And then when you do make that step, you'll be ready not just to play, but to make a real impact, as Sara has done this season at Galatasaray, as hopefully Sainz will at Porto as well. So, yeah, I reflect on his time as positive on the whole. I think there's, I know maybe the ending wasn't quite as good as the start of the season, but I think it's hard to look at it in the round and say that if that would have been the return, it would have been perhaps a little bit more inconsistent rather than that burst. I think we'd still talk about it as a really successful campaign for him. And I think you have to remember as well the playoff game first leg against Leeds. He was on the bench, he was on the bench. I don't think he started that game. So it shows how far he came in those 12 months. And his goal scoring was electric, the type of goals that he scored, the quality of goals that he scored. And, you know, he obviously developed a really strong relationship with the fan base within that. Clearly, there are some areas that need to be refined. I said this numerous times, I didn't think he created enough. He'd probably obviously get the opportunity to do that in a Porto side where you would imagine, particularly under Farioli, that they're going to dominate games at that level. I think he's going to a very good coach as well to kind of kick him on. So, yeah, all told, I think this is a really good deal for all parties. I think Saints will be happy, Norwich are happy, and clearly Porto will be happy they've got the player. So, you know, they've shown the most interest all the way through. Napoli clearly made a bid. There was never anything from Bilbao. There was definitely nothing from Nottingham Forest. So, yeah, when those options are on the table, if it wasn't going to be Bilbao, I think Porto probably was the next best bet for him. And yeah, I think on a note of somebody who's watched him over the last 2 years, that feels like a really good move. And I'm sure we'll all be watching his progress in Portugal with real interest.
Yeah, a couple of people just asking around maybe the finances and the structure of that deal. Yellow Park 86 on YouTube saying, what's the fee for signs excluding add-ons? And Lucy saying, is it not obvious that they'll just pay the 1 million euros? I don't really know why we bothered with the sell-on and didn't just add that to the fee, I'm assuming that says. So sort of, I suppose you can just provide a little bit of clarity maybe and maybe why Norwich have structured it that way, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, you look at actually how much Norwich would get from a sell-on fee. And obviously most of them are based on profit. I would assume this one is based on profit as well. So if they do end up getting those add-ons and Porto have paid 14 million for him, then I'm thinking it's quite a lot of maths at quite short notice. But they would then have to make, I think, around a £5 million profit for Norwich to get that 1 million back as sort of a 20%, worth bearing in mind as well that obviously they'll still have 10%. So actually, the only way they lose out if Porto decided to activate that clause would be if they sold him for 24 million or more, or somewhere around that figure, maybe slightly less, because obviously you have to translate euros to pounds. But first of all, I think given Saints' age, the sort of time in his career he's in, and probably also what we've seen in terms of the upper limits of his ability. I don't see him being someone who eventually gets sold back to the Premier League for sort of 40, 50 million. I think he still has some gears to go through, but I'm not sure he has enough where Norwich are going to be losing out significantly there. And obviously the important part of that is that if Porto did trigger that clause, then Norwich would have guaranteed income. Whereas it could be that Saints, and obviously I'm sure we all wish him well and we hope this doesn't happen, but if he absolutely bombs at Porto and it goes terribly and they end up selling him for 5 million, then obviously there won't be any profit. Norwich won't get anything from that. And if they did take up this clause, then Norwich are protected to an extent against that. They get a little bit more money from the original deal, and they're protected, you know, in a situation where I think you look at Jonathan Rowe, for example, and the way that his first season has gone at Marseille, obviously there's time for him to sort of turn things round. But right now, it feels relatively unlikely that they would sell him for a profit. And of course, Norwich won't benefit from that. Whereas in this situation, if the same thing happened with Saints, they've got that guaranteed income. And I do understand the concern about it, because it does feel when you actually, until you properly break it down and think about how much they could be losing in that scenario, €1 million doesn't really feel like that much when Norwich are signing players for £6.9 million. They've got several players in there who are sort of cost them £7 million or more. It doesn't feel like too much, but actually, as a portion of the ultimate money they'd get from a sale of Saints, I don't think it actually looks too bad when you really break it down. And ultimately, it's a bit of a gamble, but I don't see it really as a huge one. So I can sort of understand why they've done that. As far as the deal more widely, I think a good portion of that is guaranteed income. So they're in a pretty good position as far as that goes. It's not a sort of Max Aarons deal. I remember that was one where sort of the figures ranged between, I think it was 7 million and 11 million. And that was obviously a deal that entailed a lot of add-ons. This is one where Norwich are guaranteed quite a large amount of that. Not necessarily up front, but they are guaranteed that money. And then a relatively small proportion is add-ons. So I think overall, they've got quite a good deal. Of course, you have to remember, as Connor outlined, they signed him for free. He only had a year left on his contract. And I actually saw quite a few fans going into the summer saying, if you can get, you know, 11, 12 million for him, then that will be quite a good deal. So I have to say for Ben Knapper, although it maybe isn't a completely eye-catching figure like it was around Adam Eder, for example, when he went to Celtic, I think it is a pretty good deal. And although there are a lot of elements to break down, I think most of them make sense, probably for both Porto and Norwich. I think it's quite a fair deal, to be honest.
Yeah, with Sainz's departure, inevitably Norwich are going to be in the market for a left winger. And I can see more comments about a Papa Diallo, Senegalese winger from Metz, than anybody else in our comment section at the moment. Seven goals, four assists in the regular season last year for Metz. You know, clearly a talented young player. There's been, you know, reports, I think Slavia Prague were one that were linked with him earlier on in the window, and Watford seemingly, you know, were sort of the front runners for him. Have we sort of seen any movement, I suppose, Connor? Because I think there was a lot of reports maybe, what, a week ago now that he was in Watford for a medical, and clearly nothing's moved in terms of a confirmation there. So is that one that Norwich is still ongoing with?
Yes, you're right. He's done a medical, but he hasn't signed yet. So whilst that is the case, Norwich are trying. And my feeling, having sort of known how Norwich have acted throughout this window and seeing the business that they've done, is that they would not be trying if they weren't given some encouragement to keep trying. And again, the longer I think it goes on that Diallo hasn't signed for Watford, clearly the bigger the opportunity for Norwich. Like, I don't exactly know why that hasn't got to the stage where he's done his medical, then sort of you expect confirmation to come pretty quickly. I don't know why that hasn't happened, but if it is that he is unsure or he is waiting for Norwich, I'm not saying that is the case, but if that is the case, then that creates a really interesting dynamic and opportunity for Norwich. So that is the point I would make. I think Norwich have been given encouragement, because if they hadn't and there was no chance and you're saying, well, I'm signing for Watford, then you don't continue to pursue that line of inquiry and pursue it. So where it's at is that they've not yet agreed a deal with Metz. That is still at club to club kind of conversations. Watford clearly have, and they clearly had talks with Diallo. I think as well, you have to be wary at this stage that you have kind of agents and representatives and people around it, and you never quite know what games are being played where. It could just be that maybe he's trying to seek a little bit more out of Watford, and so he's got Norwich and using that in that way. I don't get that's the sense, but you never can be sure. So yeah, I think probably the way to couch it is the way that we've couched it since the beginning, really, is that it feels like him going to Watford is probably the most likely outcome at the moment, but I wouldn't disregard Norwich yet as of Friday lunchtime, and obviously these things can move quickly in either direction. So yeah, one to keep an eye on, but you know, they're trying, and that's the latest we have on it. And as I said, just to reiterate, I don't think they would be trying if they hadn't been given encouragement that he would be open, because what would be the point? So that's where we are, and let's see how it develops, because I could see it moving in basically any direction pretty quickly. So I think it's one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, we've sort of maybe, you know, put that messaging out there that Norwich have been in the market for two wingers maybe between now and the end of the summer, Sam. But I know you've done a piece yesterday providing a little bit more context around that. You know, are you still expecting them, you know, moving sort of between now and the end of the summer to get two through the door, or maybe just go with one and maybe look at some of those other options throughout pre-season?
I think probably two is the most likely scenario. That's based mainly on my opinion of the squad makeup, but the feeling right now, sort of behind the scenes at Colney, is that they will definitely do one left winger. They definitely see that as a position they need to strengthen, and for pretty understandable reasons. Obviously, with Science going, they've only really got Elliot Miles there as a proper left wing option. He hasn't started in the Championship before, and then they've got Chris Garden, who they think could cover that position, but I don't think they want to commit him completely to being their first choice left winger next season. So they definitely want at least one. And then from there, much like probably a couple of other positions, I think they want to see how sort of pre-season develops, what Liam Manning makes of a couple of those players who maybe right now they're unsure on in terms of what the future holds for them next season. I think Gabriel Forsyth is seen primarily as a wide option for them. So if, for example, he has a fantastic preseason, obviously he's coming back from injury, so they and Liam Manning want to have a proper look at him before deciding what role he could play. Miles is another good example. Obviously, we saw him come through a little bit last season, but if he takes off in preseason, then that might be an argument for only adding the one left winger. But I think for me right now, having seen all of the relevant actors and where they are in their career and how they've been viewed for a little while, I would be surprised if anyone advances to the stage by the end of preseason, that they don't end up doing two wingers. I think that does feel like the most likely option. Obviously, we've spoken about Diallo, and we know that he's one they've looked at. The Premier League loan route is a significant option for them as well. We've been saying, obviously, for a few weeks that Lewis Kumas has been on that long list of potential targets in terms of players they might look to in that market. But that is another market that tends to develop much later in the window, when clubs know who's going where, you know, how strong the depth is in certain positions. So, yeah, I think one winger will definitely come in, hopefully sooner rather than later. And then the other one might rumble on a little bit until Manning's had the chance to sort of gather his thoughts on the squad. They've been able to properly assess it and see how many options they have and look at that. And that doesn't just go for wingers. I think that goes for a few other positions when you look at some of the players on the fringes. We've had a question about Rory McConville, and we'll come on to that. But him, Brad Hills, Emmanuel Adegbuega, Liam Gibbs, all of these players who have been around the fringes of the squad, I'm sure Manning will want to assess where they are and whether they could contribute to the first team next season before deciding what action to take on those. So, yeah, I think a few positions to look out for in terms of outs as well as ins, where the decisions haven't necessarily been made. But, yeah, definitely at least one left winger, I think, is what they want right now. And then we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, let's rattle quickly through some of these comments, because there's plenty of players still to get through between now and the end of this show. Lucy saying, are we going to sign a left-back, or was Creswell a left centre-back option? Obviously, there was that rumour yesterday that surfaced that Norwich were reportedly interested in Aaron Creswell, who's, you know, since signed for Stoke on a one-year deal. You know, a 35-year-old from West Ham, played in the Premier League, lots of experience. What did you suppose sort of make of that, Connor? Is there any reading that maybe Norwich is sort of in the market potentially for another left-sided option?
Yeah, it was an interesting one, wasn't it? Because I think, you know, we think of a 35-year-old kind of released Premier League player. I think you get flashbacks from kind of 2-3 years ago when David Farkner was in charge and they were going down that route. But yeah, he was one they tried for. I think it was ultimately geography probably that pushed him to Stoke. He's from Liverpool. How much, if at all, the kind of exit switch stuff played a part, I don't know. But I think we were certainly led to believe it was about, yeah, geography rather than sort of finance. I think he may even have got better finance at Norwich and opted for geography. He's a Liverpool lad. He's at a stage in his life and his career maybe where he wants to sort of build a base there. And you can understand that decision being made, to be honest. Probably doesn't need the finances. Obviously had a very long and successful spell at West Ham. So yeah, he was one they were in for and tried for. And that is interesting within itself. And, you know, certainly you think left back wise with Krizene and Mahovo, what do we know at the moment? We know that they've both missed the end of the season with injuries. Clearly, we don't know as of right now where they are both at, if they are training, when they're going to be training, if they've come back to training yet. Clearly, we will speak to Liam Manning tomorrow after that game against Northampton to obviously help build up a full picture of that. But if it is the case that, let's say, one of them is going to miss a portion of the start of the season, could you then understand Norwich going in a direction and at least looking at some options of maybe more experienced kind of short-term cover? And I don't think Creswell is the only one by all accounts. Yeah, I think you could understand that being the case, because you've got two guys there. Krizene, this is maybe quite harsh, but the Krizene stuff was an awful challenge, really, that should have been a red card at Blackburn, the tackle that caused that injury. But, you know, he had picked up a couple of knocks before that. Mahovo as well hasn't played too much Championship football. I know what he did play was very good, but hadn't played a full 90 minutes. And, you know, maybe this preseason would have been utilised to really build up that conditioning. So if there's any sort of suggestion that either of those aren't back or aren't going to be back for the start of the Championship season, I think it does create a decision where Norwich need to potentially look at maybe adding an option. Of course, the fear of doing that is that by adding someone who's more experienced in the short term, you block pathways. And if things get a little bit tricky, coaches tend to lean on more experienced players. So, and clearly Norwich's model, as for all the reasons why they pivoted away from that when David Wagner was in charge, doesn't really build for that. So I think there is maybe a decision to be made. Clearly someone like Kenny McLean, who did fill in that position towards the back end of the season, that would provide them with a bit of natural cover if they saw fit. But again, you don't know how much or how prominent a role Liam Manning views for him in the midfield. So I think there's so many moving parts to this at this moment in time. I think until we get perhaps a little bit more clarity from Liam Manning, I think it's probably a wait and see. But the fact they were in for Aaron Creswell, which they were, is really interesting, I think, at this stage, and maybe suggests to me that those injuries to those two players maybe have not quite gone to plan, or maybe there's a little bit of a curveball that we don't know of as of yet. So yeah, I think it's watch this space. As I said, I think there are other left back options being lined up. So I think as and when we get some more clarity with Liam Manning, I think that whole picture will probably present itself. But to answer one of those comments that came up, Cresswell was being targeted as a left back, not a left sided centre back or a third option or anything like that. So yeah, I think it's probably watch this space on that one at this moment in time.
Yeah, definitely worth keeping it locked to Manning's post-match interview across the Pinkin channels tomorrow afternoon, where there'll be a little bit more clarity, hopefully, on that situation. Obviously, a lot of people as well are asking in the comments around the midfielder and, you know, where Norwich are at the moment with that saga. JC on X saying, any more news on Mattson? Ben asking what's happened to the Chukwuani rumour. I've seen quite a few other people sort of mentioning about Mattson. I flashed some of those comments up. Sam, where are we at with that midfield search? You know, Mattson probably feels like the front runner in terms of, you know, the names that are out there at the moment.
He definitely does. And I would say on that, it probably suggests where Norwich's priorities are. Obviously, they have looked at other players and they'll certainly be ready if they can't do a deal for Mattson. But yeah, that's at a far more advanced stage than in anything else. Although what we're led to believe at the moment is that there haven't been any really huge steps forward in that. Obviously, talks are always ongoing and they have been for the last few days, but still sort of bartering from club to club as to what Mattson's worth and what Norwich would like to pay for him. Obviously, there were those reports of a £1.75 million bid being being rejected early on in the window, but those talks are ongoing, and I think there is quite a lot of confidence at Norwich that he's someone who wants to join them. I think the main club also linked with him was Portsmouth, and other Championship clubs have looked at him, but I think Portsmouth have been linked recently with a midfielder from MTK Budapest, which probably tells you the sorts of noises they've heard from Mattson over the last few weeks. And yeah, I think Norwich are quite confident that they can get that deal done, but right now it, certainly doesn't feel like anything imminent. Still talks from club to club, but I think you look at those finances that were in those reports a couple of weeks ago and compare that with some of the other players who Norwich have been chasing, the fees that they've been willing to pay. I would be surprised if finances were an issue. It's just about getting the best possible deal and trying to get that over the line. But clearly he's somebody they've liked for a really long while, somebody who's quite highly rated from across the Championship really, and across football more widely. So yeah, I think he's another one who Norwich would be very pleased to get over the line. It probably would mean some more midfield work. I think it would mean Ben Napper would be slightly more open to allowing other players to leave. We know there are certain situations around sort of Emi Marcondes, Marcelino Nunez, where it might be in the club's interest if the right deal is on the table to maybe do that deal. But right now, obviously, on outs, nothing on a particularly advanced stage. But I would say that probably gets a little bit easier if Mattson is in the building, and clearly somebody they like, clearly somebody they're confident on. And right now, it's just sort of watch this space until the breakthrough comes. Because yeah, just right now, it's about club to club and about that bartering going on. So yeah, sort of watch this space on that one. Really, not too much of an update I can provide. But yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on.
Another name that's popped up numerous times throughout the comments section is, Josh Sargent, Connor, who, you know, we've spoken around a few times on these shows over the course of the summer. You know, a player that's been linked to a sort of, you know, different amount of clubs in Italy, some in Germany. We've had the English clubs as well in sort of Burnley and Leeds, and nothing really too concrete in terms of anything at the moment. But Tony saying, really wish we had some clarity on what's happening with Sargent. Yellow Park 86 saying, can we confirm wanting 16 million for Sargent was fake news? Quite a few other people, Aidzo saying, do you think there's any chance Sargent stays? Where are we at with him and maybe his Norwich City future at the moment, Connor?
Yeah, I can probably take those comments in order, really. The first one, you might have to remind me, was about clarity. Well, ultimately, we're not going to get clarity until either he's sold or the window closes. So, yeah, that clarity, I don't think is going to come anytime soon. The second one about the price tag, we wouldn't have put it out there if that was the case. So, I'm afraid, you know, it is the market that kind of dictates where things are at. It doesn't mean he'll go for that. He could go for more than that. I think that was probably the figure that that talks would seriously begin. I think that's probably a better way of thinking about it than that's the figure that he goes for. So that's that one kind of dealt with. And then the last one, I feel and have felt all the way through, it's unlikely. It feels to me like this is, you know, as again, I've tried to put myself in Josh Sargent's shoes. I think if I was representing Josh Sargent, which I'm not, I would probably say to him, look, you need to get yourself a move and challenge yourself at a higher level. At the moment, that doesn't feel like we're at the stage where, you know, Borja Sainz is currently and it's on the cusp of happening or an agreement is happening. But, you know, from what we have reported and you know, understand to be the case, I think Wolfsburg and Burnley have both had kind of discussions with Norwich about what a deal may look like or may need to look like for anything to happen. I don't think it's advanced beyond that stage. As things stand, he's training with Norwich. He is, as far as we understand it, set to play tomorrow. If he doesn't, clearly we can ask Liam Manning about why that is the case. But at this stage, that certainly sounds like it's going to be the case, with the caveat that, of course, they're still managing minutes with him, etc. So that's kind of the latest as we understand it, really. That's, as Sam said on Mattson, not really moved on that much. And these things can move quickly and, you know, agreements can be struck pretty quickly. But until that agreement has been struck, then Norwich have to plan as if he's their player. What it would be more interesting for me, I think, now Chris Gordon is in the building, is if he did go, would they then go and get a replacement or kind of a like for like replacement, or would actually it be that Chris Gordon becomes the kind of central nine that they build around and the focus becomes on the wide areas, which is sort of where my head is at the moment. But that's not to totally rule out that they go and get another striker, although I sort of feel that's quite unlikely. So I still probably expect him to move on, if I'm being honest. That's just an opinion rather than knowledge. And, you know, certainly the sense you get is I think he would be open, maybe as open as he's ever been this summer to moving on. Clearly, you know, we've spoken about it a few times, that World Cup on the horizon, the fact that he's not been in the last few squads. I think all of this will be on his mind. I think from Norwich as well's perspective, he is what, another major injury away from chipping a huge amount off any price tag. If he gets another major injury, then it's going to be difficult, I think, for Norwich to get the level of fee, even a 16 million type fee, as to what we're talking now, because that record as well. I think you have to bear in mind that internationally he's not really performed. I don't think it's been his fault always, and he's played in some pretty bad teams and in some pretty tough circumstances, and maybe hasn't got the luck, and there's been injuries, of course, but he's not scored a goal for the USA for 5 years, and that's a fact. And that's, teams look at that and will look to how that translates, how his American performance translates to what they're trying to do. And that probably does limit the pool of suitors. So, we'll see how it translates. At this moment in time, it feels like Wolfsburg and Burnley are probably the two strongest in for him. Clearly, I know there's been a lot of Leeds links. I get the sense that he is probably one on a list rather than one that is sort of at the top of a list for Leeds. So, I get the sense that they maybe work through a couple first and then maybe come back to Sargent. But we'll see how it develops over the window. But I would, just to reiterate, I'd be personally surprised if Josh Sargent is an Norwich player come September the 1st, but 2nd. But it's not beyond the realms. And obviously, until someone meets that figure that Norwich wants, he will be, and he'll be involved in pre-season. So, yeah, let's see how it develops.
Yeah, a few people sort of picking up on that point you mentioned around maybe, you know, where does Norwich fit in terms of, you know, replacing Sargent if he goes? Is Chris Gordon the sort of striker replacement? Kieran, with that question, I also saw Twitchy Terry saying, in what world could we replace the sort of goal returns Sargent has offered, though? Going to need some of the current younger crop to seriously step up. I've seen a lot of other people maybe aren't, you know, asking questions around where Norwich view Chris Gordon. Is he sort of more of a wide option? Are they going to go in the market to sign another striker? Where's your head at maybe with those sort of questions, Sam? You know, do you expect Norwich, if they sell Sargent, to go back in and try and, you know, address that while signing another striker, or Chris Gordon to step up and become the main man?
I think I'm with Connor in terms of the fact that I think they'd more likely focus on the wide area, because not only in Chris Gordon but also Siernats, they've got two strikers who they see as primarily number nine options, or Siernats is certainly seen as a number nine option. Obviously, for most of Chris Gordon's career, he's played in that role. And for most of the time that Ben Knapp has been in charge of transfers, he's tried to avoid that sort of over competition where you get a situation like Eders before he went to Celtic, where he was pretty frustrated, wasn't a particularly happy bunny being at Norwich. And ultimately they had to move him on and get Sydney van Hooijdonk in. And I think we all know how that panned out in terms of that transfer. So I think they'll try to avoid oversaturating the striking position, because ultimately in the large majority of systems, you only have one in modern football. And when that's the case, as I think we see with goalkeepers as well, it's very, very hard to accommodate a second and even third choice who is of the quality to step in and really contribute to the team. I don't know who you'd be able to convince to come in, even if Sargent went, by saying, okay, yeah, we've signed someone for nearly 7 million who we rate really highly. We've got Ante Siennats, who a lot of people are expecting to really take off this season and cost £8.5 million only a year ago. But come in and you know, you'll probably play a few championship games. I don't see any top-level championship strikers coming in to do that. So for me, it would feel a more likely avenue to go down that wingers route. But I think it goes a little bit into the same bracket as those situations I was speaking about before, in terms of letting pre-season play out a little bit, letting Manning and Napa assess the squad as it is, and then maybe acting based on that in the transfer market. But yeah, trying to keep a third choice striker happy when you've got two of your most expensive recent signings already in the building and both of them seen as number nine options, I think would be, first of all, quite a hard sell, and secondly, maybe not even really in Norwich's interest. So yeah, if I had to predict it, I'd say more likely Chris Garden or Siennats would play as the number nine more of the time, and maybe they'd look to strengthen those wide positions even further.
Yeah, a few people maybe asking around some of the fringe players. You mentioned McConville, that was from Aidzo. Do you think McConville will go out on loan? I saw someone asking around Addy Boyega as well. That was a Scottish Canary. Obviously, Brad Hills, we spoke around a bit on the last show of this we've done as well, which people can recapture, you know, if they want to go and watch that after this. What do you kind of make, I suppose, of those defensive positions and maybe some of those fringe players, Connor? Because Shane Duffy's as well also on the books. You know, they've brought in quite a number of defenders. So how do they maybe manage that situation, and maybe who's here come the end of August time?
Yeah, good question. I was actually going to mention Shane Duffy, but you threw him in there at the last minute. I think a lot of it could be based on what happens with him, because clearly if he's in the building still come the end of the transfer window, that's probably going to be one extra centre-back spot that you're not going to have to play with. And if you bought in Maidich or Darling, and you wouldn't expect them both to join Norwich and not start and not play. And if it is a back four or three, I actually think the way Norwich are building their squad feels like they could be quite sort of versatile this year. I think we could play multiple sort of formations, multiple players in different roles. It feels like the players they're signing are kind of built to do that. And you know, certainly with, you look at the right back situation, for example, they've got two options there that are very different, that can basically fill every kind of fullback role that you would need over the course of a season. You mentioned the strikers as well. I could see that being quite versatile in terms of who plays when and in what situation. For example, if you go away to a QPR, that's very different to going away to Ipswich or Southampton or Leicester, where maybe the criteria and your game plan is quite different. So I think it will be probably quite an adaptable Norwich side, and therefore it maybe wouldn't surprise me if Norwich did carry maybe an extra centre-half on what they did last season, where it just then opens up the possibility to play a three at the back if they need to in certain games or in certain cases, or if the game state even commands it. And that means that obviously you would have to keep a McConville or a Brad Hills in the building alongside a Duffy, for example. What, of course, it could end up is that one of those, you know, we've spoken about the left-back situation, if you went and got maybe a Cresswell to use his example, because he was the name that was out there, you know, if he could fill in a third centre back position, then that would be helpful to kind of add cover to both of those positions, so to speak. So that's another route, or maybe is another argument for the left back one. Adeboyega, Hills, McConville, I think all of those guys have an opportunity in pre-season. And what I would say from my experience, and this is the fifth, sixth one, so I don't have that much, but from what I've seen in pre-season so far, there tends to be a player that pushes their way through that you don't quite expect at the start. Last season, that was Liam Gibbs. He came from not nowhere, but off the back of injuries and, you know, playing as a striker and all sorts at the end of last season to end up as a starter at Oxford. I don't think anyone saw that sort of process unfolding. So it's up to those guys to try and do the same. Brad Hills was good in preseason last year, didn't quite get the same level of opportunity, but did enough to keep himself in and around the group, but wanted to play. And that's ultimately why he went out on loan in January. So I think it's a really interesting one, really fluid one. And this is the case in terms of transfers generally. Things, events can happen that kind of change it. A club, Norwich, for example, we mentioned the left-back situation. You've got two there, it might not open up. And then suddenly an injury or a setback or a situation occurs where suddenly then you do need one and you have to change tact and you have to pivot. And that's why I think when we do these shows or when we write anything to do with transfers, it's always so fluid. It's never just a case of something being set. And that's kind of the position that I would put those guys in, because it feels unlikely at the moment that Brad Hills, Adeboyega, McConville could force their way through, but you never know. Medic gets an injury, Shane Duffy goes, suddenly there's a vacancy there to step into, and that changes the dynamic of what Norwich can do in the transfer market. So I would always add that caveat. So the ball is in their court essentially to try and force the issue through their performances. Clearly early pre-season as well, they will get the opportunity naturally for how the minutes are rotated, and the fact we see multiple teams usually, not quite sure how it will work tomorrow, but it wouldn't surprise you if it was two different 45 minute teams. All they can do is when they play is try and impress and try and show Liam Manning what they're about and hope that that's enough. So that's where we're at. And then I think clearly decisions on those guys, as Sam mapped out earlier, can then be taken later on in the window, you know, when maybe it's quite clear what the natural order of things is going to be in terms of Norwich City's pecking order and what Liam Manning sees in his own head as who the frontline options are. And I think ultimately it will be this process now over the next few weeks, the Dutch camp, the friendly games that probably dictate a lot of that.
Yeah, sort of similar theme, I suppose, a question on maybe the midfielder, Sam, because a lot of people are asking sort of where some of the players are going to fit in. My guy, Despo, asking any news on the Marcondes transfer. Josh saying, if we're going to sign this new centre mid, where does it leave Force and Wright, McLean and Nunez? You know, trying to fit them all in, basically. I saw people maybe asking around sort of Liam Gibbs and some of the other sort of players around the edges, Forsyth as well. Where does he maybe fit in? There's a lot of sort of questions there. Can you sort of give the people a little bit of an answer of how Norwich sort of, I suppose, rattle 10 midfielders down to maybe a couple that start?
I would love to. But I think that's probably another one that we're going to have to wait and see on a little bit. I think... as you've probably outlined in the question, it's impossible really to go into a championship season with 10 midfielders and keep all of them happy. I think the numbers are way too high, and that is definitely something that they'll have to address. But I see primarily it coming from the fringes. You mentioned Gibbs. I think he's one who, well, obviously he's had the injury issues, and I think there's very much a recognition at the club that he does need to be playing minutes. So I think if that doesn't come at Norwich, and if he isn't considered good enough to be a first team option for Manning next season, then probably the most likely route will be a loan. I think permanent wise, whether they'd like to do that or not, has kind of been taken out of their hands, because I don't think there's been much interest in that at all. Obviously, you look at his injury record, and I think a loan feels much more likely. So if he can't really impress over the next few weeks, then I'd say that's probably the most likely scenario for him. I think Forsyth is an interesting one, because he's obviously quite a lot younger. It's not quite as urgent a scenario for Norwich as maybe it is with someone like Gibbs, who's 22 and really is losing valuable years of development every season that goes by, and he's not a sort of first-rate option. I think Forsyth's 18, so there's not necessarily as much urgency behind it. And I certainly rate him highly as a talent. I think he came in last season, surprised everyone, and in those few appearances he got before injury, actually looked really good. But you look at how many midfielders are in front of him at the moment, how much more experience there is, and also the very short-term ambitions of Norwich, which I think have accelerated from last season, in terms of wanting to get into the playoffs and wanting to compete for promotion next season. I'm not sure really if there's room for him. Marcondes, I sort of touched on him earlier, but probably one they would be willing to let go if it's right for all parties. Obviously, he's 30 now, so you'd suggest that the fee probably wouldn't have to be huge to make that happen. He's still got a year left on his contract. But I was speaking to someone yesterday who, obviously at Colney, who who highlighted the fact that if they really didn't want him, if they absolutely was happy to get rid of him, were happy to get rid of him, then they wouldn't have activated that 12-month extension. So I don't think it would be a disaster or that he'd be training with the under-21s or anything like that if they didn't manage to get a deal done, but certainly one that they'd be open to if there was interest. And reports in Brazil, obviously a couple of weeks ago, suggested that there was, but that's not really advanced from there. And then the other one I'd focus on would maybe be Nunez, who obviously they want to get the right fee for. I think we've all seen how talented a player he is at championship level, but with 12 months left of his contract, it is quite a fluid situation. Right now, there's been basically no interest at all in signing him, so things would have to accelerate, but obviously they tend to do that quite a lot as the window develops, and it is still very early in the window. So that he's probably the other one, not because I don't think he's got the talent to be part of that Manning setup or that he wouldn't be, but just because of the contractual situation, he's probably the highest value midfielder that they've got that they haven't just signed in the building. So I think that's a situation to look out for, but mostly on those right now, it's quite quiet. And again, goes into that bracket of things that will develop over pre-season as Manning is able to watch those players and decide what happens with them. But yeah, for now, there's one thing that's for certain, and that's that they really need to trim that championship department, especially if they get Mattsson in, because yeah, you can't keep all of those players happy, and having 10 midfielders going into a championship season, I don't think is ever particularly helpful for morale or the atmosphere in the dressing room.
Yeah, I saw a few people sort of asking around goalkeepers as well, which they're another department pretty well stocked in. 420 is asking any news. I think it's Long and Reyes he's asking around there. I saw Thomas as well on YouTube saying now we seemingly have 50 first-team goalkeepers. What's the plan for Long, Reyes, etc.? And George as well saying, would Norwich consider terminating goalkeeper contracts? George Long, can't see too many offers coming in for him. Not sustainable to go into the season with so many. So I suppose, how do they maybe approach that department, Connor? Because yeah, as the people have outlined, there quite a few on the books at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first, before I come on to that footnote in terms of the midfield stuff you just spoke about, it's worth being sort of conscious of the fact that there's an African Cup of Nations this winter. So I think it's December to February. So there is a 2-month window there where Norwich could be without Anis Ben Slimani, Amankwa Forson. So it wouldn't surprise me if Norwich maybe carried one or potentially even two more bodies in that area naturally to cover that period. Obviously, if they were to sign Diallo as well, he's a Senegalese international. So there's a period there where he may or may not be available. So that's worth bearing in mind. It adds an extra dynamic, I think, to this season that's quite unique. And, you know, having two midfielders out, if you only then go into the season with four or five, or suddenly you've got three or two, and obviously those positions are the ones that play more but also tend to get rotated a bit more within games, and now there are five subs, I think you can carry a little bit more than maybe you could do previously. In terms of goalkeepers, yeah, I mean, clearly they're not going to go in the season with six goalkeepers. That is not good for anybody, really. And I'm sure if you're George Long, Vicente Reyes, Dan Barden, and you've seen Vladan Kovacevic come in, you've seen Louis Molden come in, you've seen Dan Grimshaw come in, I would suggest you probably know what the direction of travel is for you. And I'm sure they've had those conversations as well with the people that matter. And then it's about, obviously, those guys going out and trying to explore and find opportunities for themselves. And again, I think goalkeeper's quite unique in that a lot of those positions don't tend to get filled until a little bit later, particularly the ones maybe that are of a backup nature. And loans as well tend to be naturally later in the window. So you would hope it doesn't get to a stage where Norwich would need to do that. Clearly, Long signed on a free transfer. So I think if that was the realm that had to be entered and those conversations need to be had, I don't think it's the end of the world if they lost him under those circumstances. Clearly, though, from his perspective, he would have to agree to that. He signed a 3-year deal last year. So he's well within his rights if he wants to sit there and wait it out, and you know, who could blame him for that if that was the case. Reyes equally only signed a new deal in March, so again had a loan at Cambridge. You could kind of see a similar route opening up maybe later in the transfer window. And Barden was on loan at Swindon. I think it's a real shame kind of how it's panned out for him. Someone who was clearly quite influential in terms of Norwich City's title winning season, and clearly had that horrendous illness and a couple of loan moves that haven't quite worked out, and that's how football works. It's ruthless and it kind of waits for nobody, but it's a shame. And yeah, I think I would be shocked if all three ended the window as Norwich players, particularly given how they're strengthening the under-21s. Riley Mitchell coming in with Louis Lyons is one that I would expect to come in as well from Coventry to sort of supplement that department, under-18s as well. That would then allow a Caleb Anson to go out on loan as he did last year at Altrincham and do very well. So yeah, I think basically it's hard to see how they stay at the club unless they decide they want to. And I think that's probably quite unlikely because it doesn't really suit anybody in that case. So it's just a case of them finding different opportunities, and that could sort of naturally happen in the second half of the window where injuries happen and suddenly a lower league team needs a loan or a filler option. So yeah, as with others, sort of out of an outgoing perspective, I think we're probably yet to see that really sort of move up a gear from where we are at the moment. Norwich's focus has been on kind of incomings, and I think that's understandable given the volume of business they've been able to do before the first pre-season game tomorrow. So I think ultimately it's positive that that's where they are and that they start pre-season with real competition for places. What's going to be interesting is to see how they manage that over the next few games and weeks where they've got lots of goalkeepers to give minutes to and probably not enough games and minutes to give them to. So we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, Aaron saying, would you say we filled the gaps we had last season? Now the higher-ups are looking at improving on what we have, or are there still major holes to fill? Unless you boys disagree, given obviously we've kind of mapped that, maybe that left fullback, you know, option, the midfield option coming in, the wide players, it doesn't feel like there's too many other areas that kind of need to be added to or you know, maybe addressed, I suppose, moving into the summer.
Yes, with the caveat that it could, as we mapped out earlier, it can change and Manning can decide that actually he feels they need to strengthen in a certain position or there's a major injury that throws things off kilter. That would be how I see things as of 1:30 on Friday, the 11th of July. That doesn't mean it will change and that's set. So yes, with that caveat, that's kind of what I see.
There we go. Hopefully that answers that. I think a lot of the questions now around pre-season, maybe what we're going to expect and see, is a 1 p.m. kickoff tomorrow, Global Bloodstock. So you can keep it locked to our channels for all the coverage there. We'll have a little bit of an update on maybe whether Norwich is going to stream it in just a moment. But let's delve into a few of these other questions people are asking about. What have we got here? Let's delve in some of these. Few people maybe asking around the sort of tactics, I suppose. Lucy saying, saw some people talking around the 4-2-3-1 on the tactics board on social media, something that people should read into and get excited about. I also saw another question maybe around that and sort of the video that was put out around Vis Gordon signing, pre-season opportunity to maybe experiment, maybe not reading too much into that tactics board, Sam.
No, I'm not really. And much as I would personally, in terms of what I like to watch, much rather see a 4-2-3-1. I think one of the most consistent things we've heard throughout the summer has been the feeling that Manning will have different formations to go between. I think that makes sense when you look back at his career so far, and also the slight pragmatism that Norwich want to add, rather than last season where it maybe was a little bit more set and a little bit more idealistic. So I think rather than building a squad around one specific formation, they're trying to give Manning as many options as possible and give him enough players that he doesn't have to worry about numbers if he ever wants to change things or wants to do things differently game to game. So I'm sure at various times next season we will see a 4-2-3-1, and probably when they're trying to be a little bit more attacking, that makes more sense. But I think, first of all, you're right to say that pre-season is a chance to experiment a little bit. And I'm sure actually, even if he was going to decide on one formation that this team will use for the whole of the season, he wouldn't have done so yet with some of these games to sort of see how each of them works with the personnel available, but also just in terms of how he wants to adapt from game to game and how Norwich will focus a little bit more on individual results rather than trying to perfect one system that gets all the results in all of the different games. I think it makes sense not to commit to one particular formation. And I did find it interesting that chart was there. I thought one of the most interesting bits was the goalkeeper department, as we've obviously just spoken about. I think the list of names is about that big on the board there. But no, I don't think that's an indication that it will be a set 4-2-3-1 next season. I think that's one formation that they probably will turn to. But the more people we speak to and the more you think about it, really, the more it makes sense that that Norwich will probably change things up from game to game next season.
Yeah, some people maybe are asking around options. Elliot Pearce, any injuries for tomorrow's preseason game? I saw someone asking around whether Forsyth would be fit, and then someone as well, I think it might have been Finley, saying I see Nunez is back. I presume all internationals are back now, or there's some yet to return, I suppose, given that Chris Gordon won't be playing tomorrow. And so have we got sort of any other players that maybe we're not expecting to feature tomorrow at Colney, Connor?
Yeah, not expecting Oscar Schwartau, just on the basis that the club put out an interview with, or behind the scenes with Chris Vardsky, and then he was on FaceTime, and I think he'd been involved in the under 19 Euros, if memory serves. So I think that ran a little bit later than the international games that Nunez had. Cordoba as well. I don't know exactly when the, what tournament was it he was playing in? Was it the, there was a tournament he was playing in? Was it the Gold Cup? Yeah, yeah, so that ended a bit later. So I probably wouldn't expect him back. I think, I don't know this. Obviously, we'll ask Liam Manning tomorrow, anyone who's not there, but I suspect those guys will probably come back into the fold for the tour of the Netherlands at some stage. So that would be my expectation. Obviously, others in terms of injuries, haven't had a touch point with Liam Manning, so that's harder to call him. Obviously, we'll get a full update when we speak to him tomorrow.
Yep, Sparky's saying Domaraki's been training with the first team in pre-season videos. Is he one that Manning likes and could break into the first team? Jeffman saying, do we know the setup for the first friendly? Two different starting 11s need a way to try and fit all the goalkeepers in. So sort of, I suppose an opportunity as well for some of those fringe players, maybe the likes of Elliot Miles, etc., to try and get minutes as well tomorrow.
Yeah, I think on Domaraki and probably the large majority of the younger players you'll see in the pre-season friendlies, particularly towards the start of pre-season, probably in this game and then in the Netherlands, it will be quite a large group. So I wouldn't say that everyone who's in the sort of first team training picture or plays in these friendlies is likely to be part of the first team next season. It was sort of a similar situation last season when there was a second half against Northampton, and I don't think barely any of those players ended up playing a minute for Norwich when the season actually started. So I think that probably explains why Domaraki and some of the other maybe less expected names have been in those sorts of images and things like that. As far as the friendly tomorrow, I don't know for sure, but I can't remember the last time Norwich played their first pre-season friendly and it didn't have two different 11s in the first and second halves. As Jeffman points out, they have got quite a lot of goalkeepers to sort of keep fit, and they've got a lot of players who they're trying to work with, who Manning is trying to assess. So I think they will try to give minutes to as many people as possible, and it'll be interesting to see who performs how, but I wouldn't take it as an indicator at this stage of who is likely to be in the first team next season. Obviously, we know the main ones, but yeah, I think it's probably another one of those where the group will thin out as pre-season goes on, and then it will become clear who's impressed Manning and who's more likely to make the breakthrough once the real stuff starts.
Yeah, question around when the window shuts. Pretty certain it's Monday to September the 1st, off the top of my head, 7 p.m. deadline. So to answer your question, Aaron, I wouldn't book. It's about the 7 p.m. deadline. So if you want to book the next day off work, then you probably go to bed about 7:30 and you'll be all right. But fingers crossed.
I'm manifesting it's all done. And we don't need to worry about deadlines and extensions and any of that like we have in the last few windows. Hopefully, and the rate they're going, you would hope that Norwich are done by then.
Famous last words indeed. Rob asking, are you having a sit down with Mark Attanasio et al. Next week, chaps? I think that might be something that's potentially in the pipeline. Connor, watch this space.
Watch this space.
There we go. We've got Twitchy Terry saying, someone I know saw Zlatan on the snails at Yarmouth. Any update on that? As far as I know, there's nothing in that one, but you know, we'll keep it locked to the Pinken channels and we'll keep you updated if anything happens. Rob as well saying, boys, can you confirm that wherever JHT ends up, he's taking Paddy with him as a number two? Again, one, we'll have to delve into our sources on that. And
We can't comment on speculation at this stage.
We can't. Killian just asking more around maybe the championship more generally and some of the window. I know we're very focused on Norwich transfers, but have you had a chance to look around other clubs' business in the transfer window? I've seen comments around Birmingham and Swansea being strong. What have you made of some of the business, I suppose, elsewhere, Connor, in the championship so far this summer?
Yeah, I looked, I think it was when Norwich made five, and just to kind of gauge how busy teams around the championship had been at that stage, and it was not very at all. I think it has picked up a little bit of pace since then. I like what Swansea have done. I think they've done some really astute business, but with the caveat they've lost clearly some really talented players as well. One of them has ended up at Norwich. So Alan Sheehan as well, being the permanent boss. I think there's a lot of kind of uncertainty there about how that will go. Birmingham, but yeah, I think Beadle's a good signing. I think Doyle on loan from Wolves is a very good signing. Last time he played at Championship level, he was excellent. I'm probably not as hot on Kyogo as maybe others seem to be. I think that could go either way. But I think they've done, as expected, some good business. I'm probably more surprised about maybe the relegated clubs, and maybe this is just indicative of where those squads are. I think Ipswich probably are in quite a good place. I think they're pretty close to a couple. I think reading our colleagues down in Suffolk, I think Cedric Kipray and another sort of Dutch midfielder from France, they're pretty close on. So maybe that'll heat up. Clearly Leicester, you know, as it stands, don't even have a manager, but that seems like a bit of an odd situation. And I know Southampton have just signed Downs from Germany, but they haven't done too much either yet. So yeah, it probably doesn't really feel like it's exploded into life yet. And I think that probably tells you more where Norwich are rather than where the Championship window is more generally. And again, not to labour the point, but their second signing last summer, Ben Crezene, wasn't done until I think the 28th of July. So it's a testament to how quickly they've gone out and the intent that they've gone out with to get business done early, that they've maybe been able to get a lot of stuff done. And ultimately, how much will it mean? I don't know, but it means that Liam Manning has a better chance to kind of try and build some connections and partnerships in his team a lot earlier than perhaps Johannes Hovtorup did. And we all saw what happened on Oxford. They felt like they were undercooked, and they looked really undercooked as well. And that led to a bit of a slow start. So it probably hopefully allows them to hit the ground running a bit sooner. But yeah, as for other clubs, I would agree. I think Cov have done some good business as well. I think Kesler Hayden is a really smart bit of business at this stage of his career for the fee that they've paid as well. So a few bits of business that kind of I've looked at and gone, yeah, that's pretty good, but no one really has overwhelmingly kind of caught my eye, maybe beyond the two that are mentioned.
And to round off, Sam, a lot of people asking around pre-season, will there be any streams available for tomorrow's match? I think quite a few people sort of flashing that comment up now. So can you give sort of the people an answer on whether that first game tomorrow afternoon is going to be available on the club's channels?
I'm going to have to be the bringer of doom again, unfortunately. But yeah, no stream is planned for tomorrow's game. But obviously, we'll be there for the game. So the Pinkin is actually the best place to consume it. I'm going to do all of Adam's usual plugging for him. Pinkin.com/subscribe. We've got a flash sale on at the moment. So £15 for a whole year. And obviously, that includes the coverage of the busy next few weeks. Obviously, we'll have all of the coverage of tomorrow's game. Connor's live blog will be one of very few places, I'd imagine, to follow what's actually happening. So go there. Obviously, we'll speak to Liam Manning and a player after the game as well. So hopefully it will give us a real chance to bring people up to date with what's happened over the last few weeks, get Manning's take on, I think, all of the signings. They hadn't made any signings before he'd arrived, I don't think. So we'll get his take on all of the signings that they've made. And hopefully should be a good day for getting a bit of insight into what's happening. So yeah, pinkin.com/subscribe now is absolutely the best time, because not only will there be plenty of stuff from tomorrow's game, but also from the tour. You guys will be out there covering it and bringing plenty of exclusive good stuff. I'd say what Connor said about watching this space on Mark Attanasio as well, that's probably worth keeping an eye on. So plenty of reasons to subscribe at the moment, chief among them a massive discount. So yeah, pinkin.com/subscribe. I think I've said that about 10 times now, so hopefully people don't forget. But unfortunately no stream, but we'll bring you as close to the game as we possibly can tomorrow.
And hopefully, if Sam's done a brilliant job there, but if that's not enough, hopefully there will be, within the next week or two, potentially a pretty good interview subject of a Norwich City related matter as well to throw into the mix. So if that still isn't enough, I'm not quite sure what more we can do to convince you to sign up, because as Sam said, now's the best time.
There we go. I'm officially redundant from my usual job of trying to plug it. Hopefully the boys have done a good enough job to sway you. Lynn, I think the Carrow Road game's now on sale. I'm not 100% certain in terms of the ticketing from the overseas games. We'd have to maybe get a bit of clarification from the club on that. And Jimbo, yeah, we're definitely going to be there. So we'll have to see on timings as to whether we can try and get something in the diary maybe before we head back to Norwich on the Saturday. With that, we're going to sign off this lunchtime. Hopefully we've covered as much of the questions and comments as humanly possible. Definitely watch this space for all that content that the lads have outlined there and all the preseason coverage that starts tomorrow at Colney against Northampton. We'll be there. All the usual match updates, all that post-match reaction from Liam Manning and a player will be available across our channels as soon as possible. With that, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Hopefully the weather's nice, whatever you're getting up to, and we'll see you in the next one of these, which I'm pretty soon will probably be coming pretty soon given the rate of business that's happened so far this summer.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.